Stanley Johnson finds Ish. Pretty good defense for the Hawks. Ish's shot rattled and it went. Stanley from the corner. He hits it. Pistons with all kinds of numbers. Reggie Bullock lays it up, lays it in.
Beautiful break.
Wide of the lane to Andre. Too strong for Collins. He hooks it, he hits it. Luke Kennard with a step up gun and it goes. Ish to Anthony Tolliver. And he triples. Blake Griffin hooks it to Ish. The wing gun goes for Ish. Pistons with the lead. Ish with another shot. And another deuce. Blake Griffin with a long gun. Goes with 0.6 seconds. Ish sneaks in, steps to the baseline. The turning gun goes.
Our bench, first of all, came in and had a huge lead and didn't even try defensively. Didn't even make an effort. Let them back in the game. They got rolling. Then the other guys came back in and didn't play any defense either. I'll take the win and go to All-Star break, but that was an embarrassing fourth quarter. We played. We got up 30. We played, and then we went to the bench at the end of the third quarter, and then that was it. I mean, we played for three quarters. We were really good, and the fourth quarter was terrible.
Just rest. Get a chance to kind of recollect myself and get everything situated here. This break definitely couldn't have come at a better time. I'm capable of putting together a really good game. You know, we have guys that can defend, guys that can score. Probably going to take a few more games to really, you know, feel comfortable with everything, but you know, I like our upside, like our ceiling.
In some ways, it's easier because all you're doing is selling out for today to some degree, but it's also just not a terribly sustainable model. And that's what excites me the most about what Kobe Altman and his team have been able to do this season is they've built a team that's better equipped now from an athletic standpoint, from a versatility standpoint, to compete at the highest level, but also set up a much more sustainable future. I do think these trades are going to go a very long way towards keeping him in Ohio, and the reason is I think he recognizes now he does have a team that he can compete at the highest level with, and young kids that are going to be there with him for a little while, and maybe he gets continuity that he might like. So I think this might enhance the chances he stays, and certainly if they can win a championship, I could never see him leaving in that circumstance.
See, this is the big issue, Stephen A., because I don't know if any place made great sense for him. And this is why there were people in the league, executives that I talked to, even an owner that I talked to, who said, if I was Dan Gilbert, I would call LeBron's bluff. I would put him on blast and say, I'm not going to add to this team unless you commit to me, because they didn't believe that LeBron had a legitimate place to go. Yes, he would be happy playing in L.A., but this Lakers team is not ready for him yet. He'd be interesting alongside those stars in Houston, but the finances don't work, and how do you share the ball with James Harden, and how you share the ball with Chris Paul? I could throw a roadblock in front of every.
No question they are. I think they're tremendous. They are really good, really talented. I think one of the top, most talented teams in the league. We'll need to play maybe the best we played all year to give ourselves a chance. I really believe that. They present a lot of challenges. Yeah, I think there needs to be some adjustments on our end, you know, going into this game, as there always is in game two. We'll expect, you know, a lot of the same way. They had success guarding us. They might make some tweaks and some changes. They're really good, and hopefully we can make some minor tweaks and adjustments to prepare them.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed, it is the extravaganza here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket, where we are, Toledo's sports leader. Hope you're having an outstanding afternoon. Thanks so much for joining us. Coming up in about a half an hour's time, maybe a little bit less, we're going to talk with Matt Lodi, who will join us from Northeast Ohio, which is kind of the home base for Goodyear, Arizona coverage until all of the reporters get out to Goodyear, Arizona, presumably over the weekend when the full squads report. But right now, pitchers and catchers are out in Goodyear covering the Indians, pitchers and catchers. And, of course, Detroit reporters are making their way down to Lakeland to cover the Tigers, pitchers and catchers. And we're going to be bringing you coverage of both today and tomorrow. Today, we'll talk to some Indians with Matt Lodi, who will be out of Cleveland by way of Goodyear. And then tomorrow, we hope to talk with one of our two or three favorite Tigers reporters who will tell us a little bit what to expect from the Tigers in spring training. By the way, I really liked what the Free Press wrote. Free Press wrote, the Tigers are going to be awful, but at least they know it. that's essentially it, right?
Right, yeah.
That's about all you can take away going into this season At least we know it. At least we're not going in here with delusions of grandeur that we're going to be a contender for the division like we thought we would be the last couple of years. Now we know we're going to suck, and it's going to make sucking a little bit less painful. That's pretty much the measure of it, at least by way of the Detroit Free Press. We'll talk some about that as we continue today. So we got some baseball talk then at 4:40-ish. We will get back to college basketball talk as Todd Kowalczyk, the head coach of the UT Rockets, will join us for his weekly hit as we like to shower our MAC teams with all of the love that we can. So that'll be coming up at about 4:40. In between now and then, we have a lot of opportunities to talk about a lot of stuff. And a lot of the stuff, well, maybe not a lot. Some of the stuff that we're going to talk about is a little bit outside of the realm of actual sports. But they have been dragged, well, the sports themselves have dragged these outside things in, and so here we are. Let me say this in response to Golden State Warriors coach Steve Kerr. I'm going to borrow a line from LeVar Ball here. When I just say this, shut up and stay in your lane. Now, that's not a guy I would normally want to emulate LeVar Ball with his antics. And stay in your lane isn't necessarily the nicest thing to say to somebody. But I get sick and tired when I hear people who don't have any time whatsoever invested in studying things that I study on a regular basis and then making stupid statements from their positions of misinformation and doing so because of their celebrity status in the sports world. Steve, if you want to talk to the media, tell us what play Andre Iguodala drew up in your players-only huddle. Tell us what you're going to do now that the Rockets are only a half game back of you in the Western Conference for best record in the West and best record in the league. Tell us what you want to do, what you're going to do, after the All-Star break. Tell us if you're going to tweak anything or rest anybody before the playoffs. If you want to talk about your team. Stop talking about matters on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C. that you don't study. Nobody wants to hear it. Steve Kerr, the head coach of the Warriors, said the following last night, and it was reported this morning, about the terrible tragedy in Parkland, Florida. It doesn't seem to matter to our government that children are being shot to death day after day in schools. It doesn't matter that people are being shot at a concert at a movie theater. It's not enough, apparently, to move our leadership, our government, the people who are running this country, to actually do anything. End quote. I would ask Coach Kerr the following. Which government leader did you speak with who told you it doesn't matter to them? Which government leader did you have personal correspondence with who said, I don't care about that? I don't need to wait for your answer, Steve. Because you know, and I know, no one has ever said that. No one has ever intimated that. No one has ever hinted at that. But you're going to make a blanket statement from your little cushion out there in California and declare that it doesn't matter to our government that children are being shot to death? Really? Unless you've got some rock-solid proof in which you can back that statement up, shut your pie hole. Talk basketball. Don't talk things you don't know. Don't talk about the law unless you study the law. Don't talk about legislation unless you study legislation. I study these things daily. I know what's going on in our country's capital, in our nation's capital. I know what legislative matters are pressing. I know what is being done and what isn't being done to deal with matters of violence in our culture. Until you start putting the legwork in, don't sit there and make stupid blank statements like nobody cares that people are dying. The fact of the matter is, everybody cares that people are dying when there are violent acts that take place. Whether they be acts of terror for political or religious reasons, or whether they be mass shootings for Lord knows what reasons, Everybody cares. Different people have different ideas on the best way to deal with that. Your idea would seem to be to have the federal government confiscate everyone's guns as if no guns would mean no killings. And that just underscores how utterly stupid you are. You might be a hell of a basketball coach. Of course, we'll never know, because the only team you've ever coached is a team with four all-stars on it. And you thought so much of how hard that was that you sat back and let your players coach themselves two games ago. But you might be a hell of a coach, a two-time champion. But that's where your expertise ends. If you know anything about the gun laws in this country, let's talk. If you know anything about legislation in this country that, if passed, would stop mass shootings, let's talk. But the fact of the matter is, you don't. And you and everybody else in the sports world, which is dragging these outside things into the world of sports, which people pay to watch you do and to hear me talk. Well, they don't pay. We got free radio. But people pay to watch you play, and people turn on the radio and televisions to hear us talk about to take them away from all of that stuff on the outside. We have wars going on. There are rapes being committed all over this country every day, multiple times per day. There are shootings that take place every day, multiple times per day. There are stabbings that take place across all 50 states every single day. There are people stealing from banks. There are people stealing from their employers. There are people assaulting one another. There are people committing suicide. All of these things are terrible things, are they not? Do you want to know why the public knows your name, Steve Kerr? And listen up, Stan Van Gundy and Greg Popovich and the rest of you social justice warrior coaches who think that we give a rat's A about what you think about all of those things. The only reason people know your names is because of basketball. They know you because you coach basketball. They turn your games on because you're coaching basketball. If they want to hear from you, they want to hear about basketball. So stop with your social commentary, uninformed, misguided, and wrong as it is, and start talking about basketball so that I don't have to go on the radio and waste 20 minutes of my show addressing this stupidity. People want to watch basketball so they don't have to think about the murders, the wars, the rapes, the robberies, the assaults, and the suicides that go on in this country every single day. They want an escape from those things. They want a diversion from those things. They want to watch you play on game night, and then they want to hear us talk about it in the afternoon. And you're making that impossible. If there's a night when they're live on TNT at 7:30 at night or at 8 o'clock at night, and it's Steve Kerr gives a speech on politics and laws and societal issues, and it draws 5 million viewers, the way live tonight at 8 o'clock, Warriors versus Rockets will draw 5 million, I'm picking 5 million out of a hat, of course, then you can probably keep talking. But I don't think anybody's going to tune in to hear you talk about that stuff. And I personally don't think they're tuning in right now to hear me talk about that stuff, which is why I'm not going to lecture you about how wrong you are about gun laws in this country and what will or won't help protect people against violent other people. I'm not going to lecture because people tuned in to hear us break down sports, just like they tune in to watch you coach and play sports. So activist coaches, shut up. Nobody wants to hear you. And that's all I want to say about that. Sadly, however, I do have another sports slash non-sports issue to get into. Jim Cushlin, do you read the Free Press or freepress.com, freep.com?
I do. I'd like to think I check it daily, yes.
I do too. I like to stay up on every single team in Detroit and in Cleveland and even further out, sometimes all the way to Pittsburgh for the Steelers fans who live in this area, to Notre Dame fans. I try to take a look at stuff out there too. And this one grabbed my attention right away early this morning when I clicked on the Detroit Free Press website. Miguel Cabrera, We talking about maybe pursuing another Triple Crown this year? No. Headline about Miguel Cabrera. We talking about him being a strong mentor to the young kids that have been added to, or that will be added to this roster as they get it pared down after spring training and put the 25-man roster on the field for the Tigers, and they're going to need his veteran leadership? No. Are they talking about Miguel Cabrera's physical condition as he ages and kind of, you know, he's at that age where he may indeed start to slow down the production? It already started last year, I suppose. The production has really kind of started to wane. They're talking about what he's doing to physically stay worthy of his 30, what does he make a year? 30 million? I want to say 30 million this year?
Yep, it is.
Yeah, I think it is. No, the article wasn't about that either. The article in the Detroit Free Press wasn't from a sports columnist, I do not believe. It was about, well, I'll just read you the headline. Miguel Cabrera makes $30 million a year, but shorts his kids on child support. What in the bloody hell? Honestly, this is the kind of thing that Cush, if we were on Family Guy right now, I would say it grinds my freaking gears. There are already enough children, particularly growing up in minority communities, in urban centers like Detroit, without the requisite necessities of life, because they have fathers who decided not to be fathers. They gave birth to their kids, or they impregnated the women who gave birth to their kids, and then they split. And if they ever were caught and brought to court and child support was ordered, they skip out on it. And then it's a matter of catching them again. And then what do? Do you throw them in prison for not paying, in which case they still can't pay, and then the child suffers some more and the single mother suffers some more? Or do you let them stay out and say, now you have to pay more? It's a terrible vicious cycle. It's part of our culture. It's a sad part of our culture. But when you are a professional athlete and you pop out loads of kids, and how many does he have? Five, I think that the article say three. Yeah, three he chose to have with his wife, Rose Angel Cabrera, and two he chose to have with his mistress, Belkis Mariela Rodriguez, with whom he had a long-term extramarital affair. So he's popped out five kids. That's a carload. That's a good sized number of kids. When you decide to father kids and you are not somebody who is destitute and trying to find enough money to make money for you, like a lot of fathers of illegitimate children trying to find enough money to survive themselves and make sure that they can meet their obligations and feed their children by way of child support for their the children's mother and for the kids. When you're a professional athlete, I can't think of anything quite as reprehensible as holding back the money that you owe your kids. And that is the subject of this article. After years of keeping his affair under wraps, the Detroit Tigers star first baseman has spent the last 6 months fighting Rodriguez's attempt to win more child support in a Florida court. It's easy to get distracted by the big numbers. But just give it a listen. Miguel Cabrera, who is 34 years old, as I say, maybe kind of in the waning years of his skills, but pays Rodriguez of Orlando, Florida, $15,000 a month, a sum that she says is not sufficient to pay the mortgage on the $1 million home she purchased last year with his financial assistance. So he bought her this house, or part of it, and promised to, of course, pay for the rest of it, and now is backing out on that. Here's the math. An online mortgage calculator and tax estimator for Orlando suggests the bank note has and taxes on a $1 million house could near about $10,000 a month. Miguel Cabrera has paid $2.5 million each month. And as the columnist in the Free Press says, we can talk later about the cultural dysfunction that pays cops in the state of Michigan an average of $53,000, and teachers an average of $61,000, but showers cash on a man who makes a living hitting a ball with a stick. But that's $30 million a year. At $15,000 a month, Cabrera would be spending 0.6%, not 6%, 0.6% of his monthly pre-tax haul to support his children. and they are his children. His paternity he has never questioned. The lawsuit filed by the mother of those two children was prompted by Cabrera's unilateral decision to decrease the monthly support from $20,000 to $15,000 just simply because he didn't feel like paying her that much. Rodriguez says that is not enough to cover the mortgage and living expenses, and she believes it was an attempt, or that this was prompted by an attempt to appease his current wife, Rose Angel Cabrera, who had filed for divorce after learning about the affair. Miguel Cabrera, you should be ashamed of yourself. And I don't care that you are a Triple Crown winner and an MVP. I don't care that you are iconic in the city of Detroit. I don't care when you go into the Hall of Fame if you do have that old English D on your cap. You, sir, need to meet your obligations, issue a public apology to the mother and to the children that you are trying to short, and then issue a public apology to your fans in the hopes of regaining some of your reputation. Because, sir, that is ridiculous. Now, those numbers, you and I can't comprehend. I admit, I can't comprehend $15,000 a month and how that's not enough. But when you make $30 million a year and you have been keeping your mistress in a lifestyle and in a home that was representative of those dollars, and then you try to cut them back when she still has the expenses and your children are the ones who suffer, you are a scumbag. So, Miguel Cabrera, do the right thing, step up, earn your respect back, apologize to your children, and in fact, maybe you might want to think about spending a little bit more than 0.6% of your $30 million a year. For crying out loud, what are you doing with the other 99.4%, Miguel? How many different mistresses do you have? How many different homes do you have? How many different cars do you have? Really? Step up and be a man. There are far too many fans who root for the Tigers who don't step up and act like men. And when they see their role model, the future Hall of Famer, acting in the same way, more kids get hurt. All right, it's 3:30. Let's get wild.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents The Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
Back to the actual games, this will be better. With comeback wins in the NBA last night from the Wizards and 76ers, there have now been, this season, 22 different games in which a team trailed by 20 and came back and won. That's 22 times it's happened now this season. That's the most times in the NBA in the past 20 years. That is indeed a wild stat. Buffalo Wild Wings wild stat of the day. Now we'll get a bottom of the hour sports center, come back and talk baseball. Actual baseball. Matt Lodi will join us to talk about the Indians, who reported and had their first pitchers and catchers work out today. Coming up next right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Brant's Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
All right, 3:38, let's roll onward on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, getting back to the games that divert us from all of the nonsense and the terrible things that are going on in the real world and in the outside news. Matt Lodi joining us now from Cleveland. And we are talking about what's going on, however, in Goodyear, Arizona. Pitchers and catchers for the Indians reported yesterday. They reported down to Lakeland for the Tigers on Tuesday. First Indians pitchers and catchers workouts for today. Full squad scheduled to be there on Sunday. Question is, Matt Lodi, when are you heading out there to work on your tan?
Sometime here in the near future. I don't know when yet. I'm looking at schedules and trying to come up with the best opportunity to get out there. You know, if you go out there, you try to find the best, the best week, I guess, or 10 days where you're going to see the most games. And, it's also fun to be able to go out there also and see some of the different ballparks like Mesa or the Cubs. They play pretty far out. They're probably the furthest, trek from Goodyear, about an hour away. But, there are some stadiums around there, Peoria. You've got the Padres and the Rangers, so it's fun to not only see the Tribe, but also get an opportunity to see some of the other teams, that some of which the Tribe will see throughout the season as well.
No question about it. And when you get out there, we will definitely check in with you a time or two to kind of get the firsthand lay of the land. Matt Lodi, of course, runs NEOSportsInsiders.com, NEOSportsInsiders.com, where he covers Indians, Cavaliers, Browns, and many other things from Northeast Ohio sports. So we want to get a little bit of a report on the Indians, and we're going to start, obviously, since pitchers and catchers reported yesterday and had that first workout today, with some pitchers and catchers news. Trevor Bauer won his arbitration hearing, and he's going to be making, about $6.5 million? I think
Right. Yeah.
How much pressure on, Matt, how much pressure is there on Trevor Bauer to deliver a second straight strong performance? Because he has not gone back-to-back years with really solid years yet in his career.
No, you're right there, Bob. And I mean, this is a guy who obviously, you know, has tinkered, and the Indians have tried to tinker with him in terms of, you know, delivery and everything like that. I mean, he, you know, 39 and 17 over the last two seasons, but the ERA still is north of four. And I think that's where the Indians really want to see him, you know, improve his game, if you will, is, you know, we still have this thing with Trevor Bauer, and it's always been kind of the albatross around his neck throughout the course of his career where, you know, when he has that one bad inning, you know, it just seems, and it happened early in his career, you know, certainly, you know, 2014, even 2015. And there's still times when, you know, he will let little things get to him. And I think he's matured a lot. I mean, you know, the guy is still only 26 years old. It's not like he's a 14-year vet or anything. But, you know, this is now going to be his seventh season. And I think when you look at him coming off of last year, you know, again, 17 and 9, you know, through 176 innings, which is about what the team wants, actually struck out, you know, more batters last year than he had the year before, even though he pitched 14 more innings in 2016. This is a kid who, and a guy who certainly has, you know, gotten the attention of around baseball as being one of those polished pitchers. And I think that there is pressure on him, though, this year in particular, Bob, because he's going to be the number three guy in the rotation. And I think that after you get past Kluber, you get past Carrasco, you know, this is a guy that needs to step up. I mean, he lost the two games in the World Series 2 years ago, and it obviously, you know, hurt the Indians. I mean, they lost that series. If they would have been able to win one of those two games, they'd be champions today. But hopefully for the Indians and hopefully for Bauer, he's continued to work hard this offseason. When we talked to him right before FanFest, he said that, you know, he's tried some different things this offseason just to, you know, be more flexible, have a little more, you know, I guess, ability to even do his game. And, you know, his power pitching has never been the issue. It's always been control, and it's always been, again, as I mentioned a moment ago, avoiding that one bad inning that sometimes tends to put him in his frame of mind in a different place.
That, you know, there you go. You just hit what I was going to ask you as a follow-up on Bauer. You say, you know, it's always been a tendency to avoid that one bad inning. It's always just a tendency to stay out of his own head. He has been a guy that when he's locked in and things are going well, he can be great. And when things start not to go well, that's when he starts to get a little bit. And I don't know how to describe his psychological profile. I'm not a doctor, and I don't really think it's fair to do that anyway, but you do understand the point. He is a very unique guy. He is an outside-the-box thinker. He is an outside-the-box trainer, the way he's trained his body through all of these years. We all know the stories when he first was acquired by the Indians. So we know that he's just, you know, a different kind of cat who marches to the beat of his own drummer, and sometimes that psychological thing is what costs him and stops him from going from being a really good starter to a great one.
Yeah, again, as I mentioned, there's no doubt that, you know, when he is pitching at his best, it usually comes when he stays within himself. And again, I know that this is a lot of psychological talk per se, but it's to a point with him, Bob, where, you know, we've seen this throughout the course of his career where you look at him and you go to yourself, okay, is this going to be the imploding inning? And as I said before, I mean, early in the career, it happened more often than not in an inning where he'd start off with either an error or a walk. You know, he walked 79 batters 3 years ago, and that was the most in the AL. And, you know, his control is, like I said, it's always been kind of an issue. He still had 60 walks a year ago, but that was tied for the lowest in his career since 2014. And that year, he only started 26 games. You know, this last year, 2017, he started 31. So five more starts equals a lot more innings. You know, you hope again that, you know, the Indians have worked with him enough. I do, you got to also mention that the one thing that this team is going to have to, you know, there's going to be a transition this year because Mickey Callaway is obviously not there. And he was a guy who, you know, really, you know, the pitchers loved him as a mentor and as a guy who really taught them a lot. You know, you bring in Carl Willis, more of an old school guy, and, you know, you hope that there's no problem with the camaraderie. You hope that there's no problem with, you know, Carl coming in, and obviously he's got a ton of pitching experience in terms of, you know, being a coach and everything like that. But, you know, you can't really sit there and you know, put down or kind of minimize, I guess, if you will, what Mickey Callaway brought to this rotation and brought to this pitching staff as a whole. And Trevor Bauer's development had a lot to do with that.
No question about that. We're talking to Matt Lodi, who runs the website Northeast, NEO Sports Insider, specifically, neosportsinsiders.com. He is also a radio reporter for the AP in Cleveland. Matt, one other note on the starting pitchers. This literally just came down about 15, 20 minutes ago that I saw for the first time. Maybe you had it before that, but another year, another injury for Danny Salazar. Mm-hmm. Announcement made today. He's going to be about 2 weeks behind to the rest of the pitchers because of a strained right rotator cuff suffered in January during his throwing program, and now his ability to start the season in the rotation or wherever he is going to be, but to start it healthy is in question.
Yeah, and I mean, how many times have we gone through this with him, Bob? I mean, it's just over and over. And again, this is a guy who, there's no doubt about it, the Indians have high hopes. They still have high hopes that this guy would be probably the four or five of this rotation. I think, in my opinion, a couple weeks ago when, you know, with Tribe Fest was coming around and a lot of people were talking about, you know, where do you see certain roles, my thought process on this rotation was fairly simple. It was going to be Kluber, Carrasco, Bauer. I think Tomlin's still at four, and I thought Salazar would be the fifth. I thought, if anything else, Ryan Merritt would start in the bullpen. You know, guys, anybody else really right now, I know that they still have, you know, Cody Anderson's another name that's been kind of bantered about, but he's coming off that injury from last year. So to me, Salazar was in this rotation, and now you just don't know. I mean, a guy that, you know, had that stretch last year coming out of the injury he had where he just looked dominant. I mean, he really did. And you thought, wow, this is the guy that the Indians have, you know, been waiting for. And then it just all continues to fall apart for him. I mean, you know, will we ever see a season like 2015 when he won 14 games and struck out, you know, close to 200 batters? Boy, I don't know, because I don't know if the Indians can count on it. You know, I think they're going to give him every opportunity to continue to be that pitcher. But on the other hand, I don't know if his body is just not meant to be. And, you know, here we go again, Bob, with the psychological thing, because it's just over and over again with him. He is just, he's a guy that when he doesn't feel right, it goes south in a hurry. And I'm not, you know, listen, we can't sit here and minimize, oh, yeah, that, you know, he's really not hurt. You can't say that because you don't know that. I don't know that. You don't know that. Nobody knows that, but Danny knows it. And I think, you know, when he starts to feel something, whether it's a twinge or, you know, maybe he does have a little inflammation, whatever you'd want to say about it, boy, it just tends to all fall apart for him. And that's a shame because, as I mentioned before, this is a guy who, when he's healthy and when he's throwing the ball pretty well, can be a dominant pitcher. We've seen it before, and, you know, again, you know, the Indians aren't certainly ready to cut bait or do anything of that nature with him. But on the other hand, they've got to continue to move forward. And really, it could be a situation with him where, you know, now with him on the shelf, here comes a guy like a Ryan Merritt or Cody Anderson when he gets healthy that, you know, might be able to slide into that role as far as being a starting pitcher is concerned. Or Mike Clevinger, of course, too. I didn't even mention him. But, you know, Clevinger's another guy that, you know, they've all kind of taken advantage of the fact that guys like Salazar can't stay healthy.
Matt Lodi is our guest, and Jim Cushion wants to follow up on that one, Jimmy.
Yeah, and because of that, and obviously one of the main notations for Indians fans to take away from this revelation today is that's going to put him, you know, a couple weeks back. And as we've kind of you alluded to as well, Matt, there's sort of a competition right now for that final rotation spot. So who has the upper hand on that if Salazar is going to be behind a couple weeks?
Well, it's interesting because when we talked to Terry Francona before Tribe Fest a couple weeks ago, he said that, you know, potentially they have seven starters right now. And I think that's part of the reason, Jim and Bob, why they didn't go out. You know, we've seen this in years past where they've gone out and gotten a, you know, kind of the grizzled veteran, if you will. I remember one year it was Daisuke Matsuzaka and guys like that. They didn't do that this year because they really want to give long looks to guys like Ryan Merritt. You know, Clevinger, who certainly I think has earned the opportunity to get a very long look at the starting spot in the rotation. I mean, with Salazar on the shelf,
I think he should
right
have been
now,
in the starting rotation in the playoffs, if you recall that
right.
Big debate, to be honest with you. Yeah,
that
Clevinger
was
absolutely
yeah.
has earned that.
There was a mistake there. So I would have to say it's got to be Clevinger right now. As I mentioned, Ryan Merritt, who is out of options, so they really don't have any leverage with him. Either he gets released or he ends up in the bullpen. I really think that they're going to have to decide, but they like Ryan Merritt. And, you know, also, you know, and it's been bannered about, you know, when the Indians talk about making moves or trades or whatever, his name always seems to come up, and he's a guy that's got a little bit of value to him because he's pitched in some big opportunities and some big games. Who can forget Game 5 of the American League Championship Series when he stepped up and, you know, he didn't throw a complete game, but he did enough to get the Indians of the World Series that afternoon in Toronto. So I'd say Clevinger right now, and again, I think it's open for interpretation in Arizona coming up in the next month where, again, you know, don't forget about Ryan Merritt, and as they said earlier, Cody Anderson's a kid who a couple of years ago really pitched pretty well. And again, he's just had all kinds of issues and injuries and, you know, inconsistency since then. But I think the Indians are interested to see if this kid could have a bounce back type of year where he comes out of nowhere and impresses some people. But again, if I was a betting man right now, I think there's no question that Clevinger is the guy that has earned the right, as Bob said, to be in that starting rotation.
So probably if everything stays according to form and everybody's healthy, right now we're looking at a five-man starting in April of Kluber, Carrasco, Bauer, Clevinger, and Tomlin. Would that be accurate?
And I think they'll probably flip-flop. I like Tomlin in the four just because it's a veteran thing. And we've seen that with Josh before where everybody thinks, oh, he'll be the five, and they end up, just from a system standpoint, they put him at the four. But really, you know how it is, Bob. You get into the season, where you pitch doesn't necessarily matter. It's all about opening day and then the playoffs. So really, as long as Tomlin's in there, yes, I agree with you there. And, of course, I agree as well with Clevinger right now because, as you mentioned before, you're exactly right. He's earned that opportunity.
Matt Lodi is our guest. You can read his work as he covers the Indians and more of the Cleveland teams on NEOSportsInsider.com, joining us here in Toledo. Again, if you're a Tigers fan and you're like, the hell with the Indians, I want to know about I don't want to hear about the Tigers. No, nobody wants to hear about the Tigers anyway. I mean, it's going to be a long, painful season for them.
It's going to be a tough one.
Which is which is kind of where I wanted to just segue into the
sure.
division. I don't think there's anybody probably at any of the national publications, let alone the folks there inside of your backyard in Cleveland, who are going to pick anybody else to win the division. But how do you size up? And it's, again, just now going into spring training, not coming out of it, but going into spring training, Matt, knowing what teams have back and knowing what teams added in the offseason, how do you size up the American League Central?
Well, the fact that the Indians, you could say, of course, they lost Carrasco, or not Carrasco, they lost Carlos Santana, lost Brian Shaw. Those are the big two names. Joe Smith as well, but he was not very much a peripheral player even when he came in last year from Los Angeles. You know, there's no question they're the favorite, and there's no question that they should win this division by a sizable margin. You know, last year, let's just be honest, before the 22-game win streak, there was questions. I remember specifically being on your show around July, I think it was around the All-Star break, and we kind of went back and forth, and you asked me, well, when will they win the division? And I said, boy, as inconsistent as they have been, who knows? It could go all the way till the end of September at this point because Minnesota had been playing well. We didn't know where the Tigers were headed, and, you know, Chicago was being pesky, and even Kansas City was still in the mix. But, of course, you know, all those teams have to me, kind of taken steps backwards. I know Minnesota's still a young team, and boy, you know, there's some people that still seem to feel like they can have, you know, some say in how this division lays out. I don't see it long-term with the pitching in Minnesota. And again, I still think that the Indians, without a doubt, I mean, with their rotation, they should be able to rather handedly win this division. You know, and again, I don't think they're going to need a 22-game win streak to do it. They wouldn't have had they still would have won the division. Let's not, you know, make any qualms about it, even if they wouldn't have had that win streak last year, but it would have taken a little longer. But when they got hot last year, they were the best team in baseball, and I think everybody agrees, though. The problem is when they got hot, it was too early, and by the time the playoffs came around, they either were too overconfident or they just ran out of gas. And, of course, the Edwin Encarnacion injury really derailed them, and a lot of people still to this day don't talk about that enough, I think, as far as that playoff run went. But, you know, I think the division is pretty cut and dry. I think the other three teams, Kansas City, Detroit, and Chicago, are all going to be fighting for third, fourth, and fifth. And I think the Indians and Minnesota will be one and two, but I think the Indians are far and away the best team in the division. And I don't see how it lays out any differently unless there's major, major moves made by another team and somebody decides to open up big pocketbooks and trade the entire farm system. But I just don't see it happening. And I think the other three teams after the Indians and Minnesota know that, you know, listen, we got an uphill battle here. And, you know, this is not our year. You know, the Indians have been in that position as well. We've seen it. And the Indians might be in that position again someday. We probably will be. So I think, though, this year it's another going to be a quote-unquote Indian summer. And I think the Indians will once again win this division for the third year in a row.
Next time we talk, Matt, I know you've got to go. Your schedule is tight. Next time we'll talk, we'll address more of the losses on the pitching staff, particularly in the bullpen with Shaw and Smith and Boone Logan and other guys having checked out via free agency. So we'll talk about that, obviously, as we get further into spring training. But, Matt, thanks for the early preliminary report on where things are and how things look, and we'll catch up with you again with you again soon.
Thanks so much, Bob. I appreciate the time.
You got it. Thank you. Matt Lodi joining us from Cleveland talking about the Indians' chances in the AL Central. I agree. You know, they should win the division for the third consecutive year. It probably shouldn't be terribly close, barring injury or barring strange setback years. You know, if Trevor Bauer falls back into old habits, those kinds of things. Or if, you know, the bullpen changes are too much to overcome. You know, we've been asking, or, you know, the Indians' manager, Terry Francona, and of course, goes without saying that we offer our condolences and our very best wishes to everybody who is close to the Indians, who is close to Tito Francona, the manager, and, of course, his father, the original Tito, Tito Francona, who passed away at the age of 84. Very sad time, obviously, for Terry Francona and for the Indians family. But my point is, how will, you know, Terry Francona has been asking the starters, Cushlin, to give them six or seven solid, and, you know, usually even six solid is enough with the bullpen that they had in the last couple of years to finish 7, 8, and 9 with guys in perfectly identifiable and adaptable roles all the way down to the closer. Now so much of that is going to be changed. A workhorse like Brian Shaw is gone. A perfect setup man like Joe Smith, who was brought on late last year, is gone. Boone Logan, who contributed, is gone. As well as, of course, some of the other, you know, key members of the lineup. You know, Jay Bruce is gone. Carlos Santana is gone. Austin Jackson, the former Tiger, is gone. So this is not the same lineup / full pitching staff that won the division the last 2 years, Jim.
Yeah, and it's really about the bullpen specifically, because, you know, we were talking with Matt there about Salazar and being a little banged up now and going to miss a couple weeks. Well, that's one of the good problems that a lot of teams would love to have. It still tells me, starting pitching-wise, the Indians have all of these types of options, at least six guys who could do it. But the bullpen is going to be the tricky one, honest to goodness. I mean, the two guys you just mentioned, Logan didn't contribute nearly as much as the other two. But you have a Cody Allen and you have Andrew Miller. Well, how are they going to go for the other routes? You know, Dan Otero's still there. Zach McAllister's still there. Nick Goody is still there. And until further notice, I think a combination of one or two of those three guys is the in-theory plan to take over, you know, the role Brian Shaw had. And that's the most important loss, because I know from Indians fans, he would take some guff every now and again, but dude was simply a workhorse who 9 times out of 10 got the job done.
He was a whipping boy. He was a pinata for some reason, but he was much more effective than any of the haters ever really wanted to do it. They didn't like him. He wasn't sexy. You know, he didn't have that Andrew Leiter. Andrew Leiter.
Andrew Miller.
I almost called him Andrew Slider because that's his pitch. He had that slider as an out pitch, but he doesn't have that like Andrew Miller. So he's not a sexy guy, but, man, you're right. He did it 9 times out of 10, and he was a workhorse because you could use him on multiple nights.
Yeah, he wasn't injured. He was over 70 appearances in 70 innings the last 3-4 years. There are very few guys in relievers of Major League Baseball who do that, because their injuries come along, among other things. So, and we're not really going to necessarily find this answer out over the course of February and March in spring training, in the spring training games. This is the kind of thing that I think is going to take all of April to figure out between Goody, McAllister, and Dan Otero, and to a degree, you know, Tyler Olson, who still to his major league career has a 0 ERA, by the by. Those four are going to be the guys that are in theory going to take over that role, but I think you're going to go through most of April before you figure out who has the lead in that and who Francona is going to trust the most to put out there. It's going to be a big thing, because as good as the Indian starting staff is, and that is intact through this year, it's the bullpen was a huge weapon, especially in the 2016 run, and there is a hole there. And that's the thing that I'm kind of at this point, if I had to be worried about anything, is how that's going to go, because you can't pitch And they won't do, no one will do this in the regular season. Remember, we speculated about it after the 2016 playoffs and how managers might approach it in 2017. But it's not going to work in the regular season. So every day the Indians have a lead in the sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, you're not going to see Allen and Miller every single one of those days. It's not how it works.
Nope, it's not. And that's why some of these guys are, you know, being missing is going to be a factor, no question. Okay, let's get a timeout here. Top of the hour, Sports Center coming up. Hey, Kush. You still got those walleye tickets in front of you, though?
I do indeed have some new, fresh walleye tickets right here.
1 week from tomorrow, Friday the 23rd, Toledo against Atlanta. I got a pair of tickets right now. We'll give them to caller number six. Caller number six to 866-240-1065 on the way into the top of the hour Sports Center. Want to get you on the radio with your phone calls coming up as well. 866-240-1065. Back after this.
Stanley Johnson finds Ish. Pretty good defense for the Hawks. Ish's shot rattled and it went. Stanley from the corner. He hits it. Pisses with all kinds of numbers. Reggie Bullock lays it up, lays it in.
Beautiful break.
Wide of the lane to Andre. Too strong for Collins. He hooks it. He hits it. Luke Kennard with a step up gun and it goes. Ish to Anthony Tolliver. And he triples. Blake Griffin hooks it to Ish. The wing gun goes for Ish. Pistons with the lead. Ish with another shot. And another deuce. Blake Griffin with a long gun. Goes with 0.6 seconds. Ish sneaks in, steps to the baseline. The turning gun goes.
Our bench, first of all, came in and had a huge lead and didn't even try defensively. Didn't even make an effort. Let them back in the game. They got rolling. And the other guys came back in and didn't play any defense either. I'll take the win and go to All-Star break. But that was an embarrassing fourth quarter. We played. We got up 30. We played. And then we went to the bench at the end of the third quarter, and then that was it. I mean, we played for three quarters. We were really good. And the fourth quarter was terrible.
Just rest. Get a chance to kind of recollect myself and get everything situated here. This break definitely couldn't have come at a better time. Capable of putting together a really good game. You know, we have guys that can defend, guys that can score. Probably going to take a few more games to really, you know, feel comfortable with everything, but you know, I like our upside, like our ceiling.
In some ways, it's easier because all you're doing is selling out for today to some degree, but it's also just not a terribly sustainable model. And that's what excites me the most about what Coby Altman and his team have been able to do this season is they've built a team that's better equipped now from an athletic standpoint, from a versatility standpoint to compete at the highest level, but also set up a much more sustainable future. I do think these trades are going to go a very long way towards keeping him in Ohio. And the reason is, I think he recognizes now he does have a team that he can compete at the highest level with, and young kids that are going to be there with him for a little while, and maybe he gets continuity that he might like. So I think this might enhance the chances he stays, and certainly if they can win a championship, I could never see him leaving in that circumstance.
See, this is the big issue, Stephen A., because I don't know if any place made great sense for him. And this is why there were people in the league, executives that I talked to, even an owner that I talked to, who said, if I was Dan Gilbert, I would call LeBron's bluff. I would put him on blast and say, I'm not going to add to this team unless you commit to me, because they didn't believe that LeBron had a legitimate place to go. Yes, he would be happy playing in L.A., but this Lakers team is not ready for him yet. He'd be interesting alongside those stars in Houston, but the finances don't work, and how do you share the ball with James Harden, how you share the ball with Chris Paul. I could throw a roadblock in front of every.
No question they are. They're tremendous. They are really good, really talented. I think one of the top, most talented teams in the league. We'll need to play maybe the best we played all year to give ourselves a chance. I really believe that. They present a lot of challenges. Yeah, I think there needs to be some adjustments on our end, you know, going into this game, as there always is in game two. We'll expect, you know, a lot of the same way. They had success guarding us. They might make some tweaks and some changes. They're really good, and hopefully we can make some minor tweaks and adjustments to prepare them.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. The extravaganza rolls on right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, where we are, Toledo's sports leader. Chris Holtman at the end of that montage. Not a voice we hear a ton of other than when we have the Buckeye reports, but Chris Holtman, the coach of the Red Hot. Surprise. Are they the surprise team of the NCAA?
I think so. I mean, they're leading the Big Ten, a power conference, so I'm going to say yes.
Well, every power conference has a team leading it right now.
But Ohio State wasn't supposed to be anywhere near that this year. We all know it.
Therein lies the rub. The Buckeyes were not anywhere near this, according to, I don't know, everybody, probably including them to a man in their locker room. Each player and Coach Holtmann probably didn't go into the season saying the Big Ten is ours. We're going to beat Purdue, and we're going to have the best record in the Big Ten. We're going to have the best record overall, or second-best record overall. We're going to beat Izzo and Michigan State. Yeah, no, don't think they were saying that going in. They were hoping to take steps forward into becoming a national power, as they kind of started to wane a little bit under Thad Mata, which, of course, led to the change. So, yeah, big game for the Buckeyes tonight against Penn State. The last team to beat them was Penn State on a kind of a buzzer beater, right, Kush?
Yeah, it was a crazy finish buzzer beater. For a second, it looked like the Buckeyes had won on a last-second shot, and then you got the crazy buzzer beater. This one's in Happy Valley, by the by, 7:30 the coverage time tonight on 106.5 The Ticket. And incidentally, next up after that for the Buckeyes, it's rivalry day on Sunday up at Chrysler Arena, Ohio State-Michigan on Sunday. So that's going to be fun.
Yes, it is. I was hoping I could get my coughing fit out while you were still talking, but you cut it off just too soon. And that will indeed be fun, and we'll keep our eyes on the Buckeyes. Hey, I want to switch gears just a little bit here and talk for a second about the NFL draft, only because of a question about the top of the draft. All right? Now, it is widely assumed that the team with the first pick, which happens to be the Clowns, that they're going to take a quarterback, the quarterback of their future, which, of course, means that they don't believe that DeShone Kizer is the quarterback of their future. Some have said that maybe they shouldn't even do that. They should sign the quarterback of the future, meaning a veteran who has already proven himself but is also young enough to continue for, you know, another half decade or so, that would make the young quarterback not have to be that guy, whether it's DeShone Kizer or somebody else. And that, of course, would mean like a Kirk Cousins, who's going to make what? $25, $28 million or something like that in a free agent contract?
My hunch is he'll make more than what Garoppolo just signed for.
Ooh, he should. But then again, he shouldn't. What I mean is he should because he's done more than Garoppolo has. But he shouldn't because Garoppolo shouldn't be making that money either. Neither one of them should be that high, so I don't want it to be continuing to raise.
Call at both points, by the way.
When the numbers go up for, you know, Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, Andrew Luck, when he's healthy, blah, 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 blah. I'm trying to think of the other younger, not Tom Brady. Tom Brady, of course, has taken less money, of course, in order to make the Patriots better, so his isn't the standard here. But the younger star quarterbacks, Cam Newton, probably Carson Wentz, when he comes up, he will, you know, 2 years from now, he will probably pass everybody up, all those kind of. That's one thing. But when you are Jimmy Garoppolo and you have had 7 starts, you don't get to make more money than anybody in the history of the game ever has. But he is. And when you're Kirk Cousins, you don't deserve to make more money than anybody in the history of the game ever has. But considering the fact that he has done more with his time in the NFL than Jimmy Garoppolo has in his, how do you not? If you're the agent for Cousins, how do you not go to the Redskins go to whomever it is that's going to end up paying him and say, you know, he's going to make more. He has to make more than Garoppolo, right? Look at his body of work. Look at his career statistics. But he hasn't done enough to earn it either. He's not a playoff winner. He's not a Super Bowl champion. He's not even a Super Bowl participant. Give me a break. That's got to stop. Now, having said all of that, they could go with a veteran like Cousins, or they could try to pry Nick Foles away from Philly in a trade and go that route and say he's going to be our guy for 3 or 4 or 5 years, and then we'll see what young guys we have. But most people, conventional wisdom says, that the Browns at number one are going to select from a quarterback from a small group of Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, Josh Rosen, or Baker Mayfield. That's the conventional wisdom as far as the top 4 quarterbacks on the board that the Browns have their choice of, right? And then it is believed they're going to take probably Saquon Barkley, the best running back, and some say maybe the best player at any position in the draft, at number 4, perhaps solving their running game problems they've had with, you know, Isaiah Crowell being average and Duke Johnson being more of a receiving back, et cetera, et cetera. So it's widely presumed they're going to take the quarterback at one and the running back at four. We agree on that so far?
I agree with that, and especially if the running back is Saquon Barkley with one of the quarterbacks, I'm probably happy on draft day personally.
Except, Jim, you don't know if you should be happy because you don't know if they got the right quarterback.
True.
Because of those four guys that I just mentioned, right? They all have massive upside, but they also all have nasty warts. There are questions about all of them. There are questions about Sam Darnold's accuracy. There are questions about Josh Rosen's physicality. He's a very skinny, skinny dude, and he's also very outspoken and very potentially polarizing. He can rub some people the wrong way. Maybe not the kind of leader that you want people to rally around. You know what I mean? These are just, you know, obviously not saying this defines the kid or all of them, but they all have warts. Baker Mayfield, we know he has the arm, but he's only 6 feet, 6 foot one, maybe. And of course, a lot of people compare his, aggressive, outlandish, might be too harsh, controversial, I don't want to say, but you know, his behavior is an issue. A lot of people think it's immature and they compare him to Johnny Manziel, and I think very unfairly. So he's got, you know, those issues. I think he's the best passer, by the way, of the group. And then there's Josh Allen, who's the prototypical, size guy with a cannon for an arm, but look at where he played, and some question whether or not he can make the jump from that level of football at Wyoming to the National Football League and in a short period of time. He might take a lot longer.
The side note randomly with Allen is if the Browns went that direction, they'd have Cleveland would have the two most talented players in either sport to come out of Wyoming in quite some time. Just randomly throw that out.
Well, who's the other one?
Larry Nance Jr.
Oh.
See what I did
interesting.
There?
Yeah, I like that. I like that. They would. So, Jim, here's a radical question.
Okay.
And a radical suggestion. Do we agree that the key to not only making the playoffs but winning a championship is having that championship caliber quarterback? It's a quarterback's league. Are we still in agreement on this?
Yes. Despite what we saw in the Super Bowl a couple weeks back, yes.
Well, what do you mean despite what we saw in the Super Bowl? What we saw in the Super Bowl was a quarterback, Nick Foles, win the MVP of the game by barely, well, I wouldn't even say he outplayed, but by playing spectacularly, along with the other guy who would have been the MVP had the Patriots won.
Right.
Both quarterbacks were spectacular. Without great quarterback play, you're not going to win a championship in the National Football League. Now, we say this despite Blake Bortles and the strange rise of the Jaguars defense kind of carrying Bortles to some extent the way that the Ravens defense once did Trent Dilfer, the Buccaneers defense once did Brad Johnson. That's a little bit of an aberration.
Right, yeah.
I think we could say also that Minnesota's defense carried them into the NFC Championship game, and Case Keenum was a huge part of them getting there, but it was Case Keenum's poor play or the great defensive scheme that the Eagles put together that really made Case Keenum have the worst game of his season in the NFC Championship game. We agree on that?
Yeah, I'd agree. I can agree with that, sure.
So by and large, this is still a quarterback's league.
Yes.
This is the one thing that everybody has to have if they expect to take the step from good team to great team, or in the Browns' case, from high school junior varsity team to serviceable NFL team. I mean, because they have nowhere, they're not even anywhere close to those other descriptions, right? So if you have to have the franchise quarterback, it's just a must. It's not a question of maybe we can get by with a Bortles. We have to have the franchise superstar quarterback for the next, you know, a top 10 player. Whether that could mean a Matthew Stafford or it could mean a Drew Brees. Okay? It could mean, you know, a Marcus Mariota or it could mean a Philip Rivers. It's got to be somebody at least in those worlds. So if that's what has to happen, here's the strange suggestion. And I'm interested to see if any Browns fans listening would agree with this or would consider this. What if you took a quarterback at both 1 and 4? If you're not sure if it's Rosen or if it's Mayfield, that is the guy that will ascend to being a great quarterback for the next decade for some franchise, why not take both of them? If you're not sure if it's Allen or Darnold, and you eliminate the other two, why not take both of them? If you think there is a ceiling that says Super Bowl quarterback for one or for a couple of them, but also enough question marks for those individuals that think Ryan Leaf type bust or RG3 limitations, or, you know, maybe just will be a journeyman in the league, won't be a bust like Ryan Leaf out of the league in 3 years, but will be a journeyman. If this isn't fixed, if you are not 100% positive that one guy out of the four stands head and shoulders above everybody else, if they're neck and neck between franchise quarterbacks, potential franchise quarterbacks who might actually wash out, why put yourself through the stress of guessing and projecting which one it will be? How many times do we have to see number one overall picks turn out to be Jamarcus Russell? Say, damn it, I thought we had a franchise quarterback for the next decade here. He was terrible, turned out to be. How many times do we need to see that first overall pick or one of those top five picks just completely flame? Oops, our bad. He was supposed to be the can't-miss kid, and he missed. They can't. Can we agree on this, Jim? They can't miss.
Yes.
On this draft.
They can't.
Getting a quarterback that turns out to be the franchise quarterback.
They've missed too many times in the past. They can't miss anymore.
This can't be Brady Quinn. This can't be Brandon Whedon. This can't be Colt McCoy. This can't be Johnny Manziel. I mean, how many more do we have to name just in the last decade alone? This first round pick, this first pick period, needs to be a star. And if they're not sure which one of them is going to be the star, why not? And you have, how many picks do they have in the first three rounds, Jim?
They have 12 total, two in the first round, three in the second, one in the
third. Stop right there. Five picks in the first two rounds.
Yep.
Holy hell.
Six in the first three, and I always go to three because I feel if you do it right, you should get starters through your round three.
Agreed, and that's fair. This is the bounty, of course, that they reaped for deciding to suck and be 0-16 and 1-15 in the last 2 years and trading away high draft picks that would have gotten you the Carson Wentzes of the world. We all know this is the silver lining to that deep, dark, black cloud.
Right.
Is that they have all of these picks. So you've got five picks in the first two rounds. I'm just going to stop there for the sake of this discussion. So you take quarterbacks with 1 and 4. You still have 3 second-round picks. Three of the top 32, or excuse me, the top 64 players in the draft to come in the second round. This way you ensure that one of those two guys is the guy that is, you know, Carson Wentz, an MVP candidate in year number two, Jared Goff, a Pro Bowler. And you are on your way to having Matt Ryan or Matt Stafford or Ben Roethlisberger or whatever, who is a franchise guy who will keep your team in contention for the next decade plus. You make sure of it. And if one of them, only one of them manages to be that guy, and the other one essentially is a washout, well, then you're glad you gave yourself the insurance pick by taking two of them. If they both happen to be outstanding, and one of them is sitting behind the other one, like Jimmy Garoppolo, and everybody is like, oh my God, I want that guy to be my starter. He can't start there because the other guy's there. Well, then you've got an extraordinary trading asset. And you take the other guy and you trade him to the guy that wish they had the first pick last year and didn't get this guy. And then you move him next year or the year after or whatever the case might be. Is it insane to suggest taking quarterbacks with 1 and 4?
I don't think it's so insane because you're actually not the first person I've heard mention that exact idea of using 1 and 4 on a quarterback. I'm not fully ready to say they should do that. They still have all that cap space and what is it, a month and a half or so since free agency starts in a couple of weeks at the very beginning of March. So you'll have that period until the draft at the end of April. And depending on what they do with some of that, that might change a few of the equations for the draft. But the biggest reason that I'm not ready to go there yet is not the logic. The logic is actually kind of good. You have those two picks in the top four, and what a fun problem that would be, you know, for the Browns, the team that screws up quarterbacks royally, since they came back, would actually have a good quarterback problem. That would be a that would be a new thing and fun to talk about.
The interesting thing what makes it even more interesting, I'll say that way, Jim, would be the fact that the quarterback room next year would have two rookies
yeah.
and a second year guy named DeShone Kizer.
Right. Right.
Who would probably still be your starter.
Who might? Yeah, he might be. Because the only thing I was thinking on that level is, do you go out and get some backup, not expensive type veteran for the mentor role? And I don't know if they would do that or not, but I think they might lean towards thinking about that if they were going to go two quarterbacks. The biggest reason, to be honest though with you, Bob, that I'm not ready to go there and say, yeah, they definitely should do that if they're not sold.
I'm not either. I think it's a good question to ask.
Yeah.
It is certainly not something, in my opinion, to answer right now, because I think it's too difficult to qualify all the what ifs and everything, but I think it's not something to dismiss out of hand. Go ahead.
No, and it's what you said. It's also a combination of, and this is where the free agency period will help figure out some of this equation is, as we know, the Browns have holes everywhere. You don't go 0-16 if you're just missing, a quarterback. We know that they have holes everywhere. And I would still, in theory, like to see at least one of those top two picks go to something not a quarterback, if you follow what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I do. I do. I get it. I understand all of the other needs. When you are 0-16, you have holes everywhere, and you got to take picks you can take players, to fill a number of different needs. Let me see what other people think about this and see if it's just stupid crazy or something to at least pause and think about. Cam is calling us from Toledo on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Cam, go right ahead, sir.
Hey, how's it going, Bob?
Good. What's on your mind?
I honestly never thought about it. Being a Browns fan, I've kind of, sat and, pondered the thought of what they should do with it. I mean, they have a pretty rare opportunity having two top five draft picks.
Yeah, they really do. They have an opportunity that nobody really has ever had, or at least that I can think of, where they didn't have to guess right and hit a home run. You can actually miss the guess on one of them. As long as you get it on the other one, you have saved or you have established your franchise's base for the next decade.
Well, exactly. And then you look at it this way. I mean, every single team that makes it to the Super Bowl or even to the playoffs has, for the most part, an anchor of a quarterback that can actually they can use to put something together, and it that you can't succeed in the NFL without having a quarterback.
Right,
you can't.
Which is why you can't afford to miss on this one. There's a backup plan for you here that fell into your lap here. That if you do miss, it's okay. As long as you take a pair. I mean, why buy one when you can get two at twice the price? And one of them
exactly.
has to work out. And if one of them works out, it would have been well worth your investment.
And to take you one further, I would predict if I was in charge of the draft, I would take Baker Mayfield and Josh Allen, only for the fact that I don't trust Sam Darnold's arm, not his arm, his accuracy. I'm sorry. And Josh Rosen, I feel like he's too skinny. He's too.
I do too.
He's too. When you have guys like the Steelers line who's always massive, hitting you, the nasty Bengals linebackers coming at you.
Yeah.
You have to
hold up.
Prepare
you don't
for
see
that.
Too many. I'm trying to think, as a matter of fact. Help me out here. Can you think of an NFL quarterback now that's a starter that is like a really skinny rail of a kid like Josh Rosen? And by the way, that's not to say he has to stay that way. They can get
him up into
the NFL weight room and put 20 pounds of muscle on him so that he can take those hits. Which would be important for him to do. But just thinking about it, the way he's built right now, I would question whether he has the durability to play in this league for a long period of time.
One of my things about Baker Mayfield, and I have to bring this up, I never thought about this, but Drew Brees is not a very large quarterback either. Now, I'm not comparing the two in their skill set, but possible that you can get a quarterback that size and have him succeed. So with that being the only detriment to him, I don't see why that could be the final factor on, all his physical attributes, his quarterback attributes, his height being the whatever you want to call it, the straw that broke the camel's back or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, I got you. The deal breaker.
I feel like I like his attitude. You know, I like that. I like the cockiness, and I think that could honestly be something the Browns need, a spark in the leadership. You know, a kick in the butt that goes, hey, you know, let's do this.
He's the kind of guy, and I tend to agree with that for the most part, Cam. He's the kind of guy, though, that would have to tone it back a little bit before he starts kicking people in the butt until he starts producing.
True.
No veterans want to come in and be kicked in the butt by a rookie, a brash, you know, rookie quarterback like Baker Mayfield, who really is brash, and he's really, really passionate, and he's really excitable, and he's all those things, which is why all of his college teammates loved him. But those are other college kids, and it was easy for them to say, man, we are to run through a wall for that guy. But professional veteran players aren't going to let this 22-year-old come in here and start acting like he owns the place until he starts throwing three touchdowns a game for the first 6 weeks.
Very true.
Then he can really establish that, if you know what I mean. There's got to be a balance.
Yeah. No, I agree. But out of all of them, I mean, Mitch Warren produced as much as he did consistently. I mean, it is an Oklahoma offense that, I mean, to be honest here, was 95% of their game was offense. I mean, you know, they weren't exactly the most defensively frightening team, but, I mean, it looked like from looking at his stats, I mean, he was pretty consistently in the high 60s, almost mid 70s percentage of completions in a game. And I mean, he was putting up 4 touchdowns a game, it seemed like, at times, you know. So that kind of production, it is college, but
You're right. It is college. And that's one of the reasons why I've kind of brought up this issue. And Cam, I got to run. Thanks for the call, buddy. Okay. That's one of the reasons I brought up the issue, because all of these guys, we can add that little caveat. It's college, so take it with a grain of salt. This is what Josh Allen did in college. This is what Sam Darnold did against college kids. But you look back and you say, well, look at what Tim Tebow did against college kids, and look how that worked out. And I'm just not picking on Tim, just anybody who was a great college quarterback, but didn't, Troy Smith, but who didn't, you know, pan out at the bigger level. And then there are guys who played in the MAC, like Ben Roethlisberger, and you say, well, he only did that against college kids, and look what he's done against the NFL. He's put together a Hall of Fame career. And that is very, very true. So you have to be careful about that. That's one of the reasons I brought it up. Because we don't know whether they're going to turn out to be a Roethlisberger. Josh Allen is the next Roethlisberger, or if he's the next Jim Druckenmiller. I bet you don't remember who Jim Druckenmiller is. Well, Kush, you might, because you probably know where he went to school, don't you? Oh, Kush is screening phone calls. My bad. Troy in Bowling Green. Kush, can you push up Troy on line 2 for me, and we'll continue this conversation. Troy, can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, gotcha, buddy. Go ahead.
Hey, I'm more of the, you got 3 quarterbacks that I don't think anybody can say that stands out like above the rest. And then you have Baker Mayfield, you have Josh Allen and UCLA and those 3 guys, the guy from Wyoming. I would propose this. Take your first pick, trade that to whoever. All 3 of those top 3 you're looking at are not going to go like 1, 2, 3. Somebody's not going to take a quarterback. Have number 5 to take a quarterback. Pick Baker Mayfield up in the 7, 8, 9 slot, whatever you could trade for that number 1. You still get your 2 quarterbacks, and you get a couple more picks out of it.
The thing is, you're what you'd be counting on here is that there would be some trading partner who sees one of those guys as being head and shoulders above the rest that you do not. If you don't think there's one of them that's a lock, chances are nobody else really thinks there's one that's a lock either. So why would somebody who's in the top 10, let's say it's 7, 8, or 9, like you're talking about, trade up to get number 1 as you move back and get their number 8 or 9 to do your scenario, and then, you know, a 2 or whatever it takes to sweeten that pot? If you don't see a clear number 1, chances are somebody else doesn't either.
And I agree with that. The other flip side of that is the Browns have never went with who everybody else thought was the number 1. They've always kind of thrown a curveball in the draft, and I think they've only tricked themselves by doing that. I mean, Johnny Manziel, when that name came up, everybody about fell off their chair. Even all the way back to Tim Couch, there's other people they thought were better than that, but the Browns had a little bit different viewpoint.
Yeah, you're right. The Browns have done things differently, and they have outsmarted themselves from time to time. I think that's fair to say. Troy, I got to run, my friend. I got to get a couple more people on the air before we talk to Coach Todd Kowalczyk. Nathan in Toledo is next. Hi, Nathan. Go ahead.
Hi. I've done a little bit of scouting myself on all the top quarterbacks, top 4 specifically, Josh Rosen, Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold and
Josh Allen.
Baker Mayfield, and Josh Allen. My viewpoint on Josh Rosen is the kid is absolutely accurate anywhere on the field. He throws a beautiful deep ball. He throws the best ball out of anybody in this draft. And I get the scary part of his injury history, but based on how he throws the ball, how he reads the defense, his timing in the routes, I mean, he's clearly cut and dry the best quarterback in this draft. Sam Darnold, I mean, he's a guy that's going to fumble. I mean, we already have a guy like DeShone Kizer who's fumbled, thrown interceptions, and that's what Sam Darnold showed all season at USC. So I don't think he can be the first pick because Hugh hates having guys that just turn over the ball consistently.
I think every coach.
Josh.
So, just in the interest of time here, which of the four is your favorite? Which of the four is you think is the lock? Is it Rosen?
It's got to be Rosen. I mean, as far as accuracy and all of that, he's got everything you want.
Considering that the most important ability in football is availability, not deep ball, not accuracy, not anything, it's availability. Considering that is a huge part of this, and he's got that question mark about whether or not he could take an NFL beating and stay upright and stay on the field, would you be inclined to take my special goofy crazy offer here and take QBs with both? Take Rosen at one and take Allen or Mayfield or somebody at four. One of them is my starter for a decade. The other one I trade in 2 years, and I get a pretty good piece back for it.
The only thing I have against that is we do still have DeShone Kizer, a guy we picked in the second round with pick 52.
Indeed.
He's only going to be 22 years old this upcoming season. So to give up on a guy so young that's so talented, he's very clearly talented. He's got the arm strength. The only issue is he turns over the ball and his accuracy. So saying I would either take Rosen or Mayfield. Those are the two guys I have as one and two.
Those are both things, by the way, that you just said. You know, he said he's got a lot of talent. The only thing is he turns the ball over and has accuracy issues. Well, that's a hell of a lot to have a problem with if you're a talented quarterback, turning it over.
Absolutely.
And I'm not throwing stones at DeShone, by the way, because I like him too, and I think he's got a future in this league. I don't know if it's in Cleveland because of the way things worked out. He might be also a guy that you trade and get a decent piece for, you know, down the road, either in the next year or two. Hey, I got to run, Nathan. I apologize, and I've got to leave everybody else on hold here because I'm way late. It's 4:41, and I've got to make room for Todd Kowalczyk, the head coach of the Red Hot. And, yes, they have stayed red hot, Toledo Rockets. So we'll talk to Coach Kowalczyk coming back right here on ESPN 106.5
The Ticket. 106.5
The Ticket. 4:46 as we roll on ESPN 106.5, the ticket from the NFL to college basketball. And my goodness, I feel like we could just kind of rerun this interview on a weekly basis with head coach Todd Kowalczyk. We just introduce coach, and we ask him about this week's pair of wins, and we ask him to predict how he's going to win the next week's pair of games, and we just rinse and repeat because that's the way it is going for the Toledo Rockets. Two more this past week, 11 of their last 12, the Rockets have won, 14 out of their last 16, now four in a row after Miami has taken down 73-67 on the road at Oxford, and then the Bobcats came to Savage and left with an 82-74 defeat. So the beatings go on for the Red Hot Rockets. Coach Kowalczyk, welcome back. Thanks for the time. How are you, sir?
Doing great, Bob. How are you?
I'm good. I'm enjoying the living heck out of watching you guys just get better and better and better as you get closer and closer and closer to the ultimate, which is, of course, the MAC tournament and an opportunity to play your way into the NCAAs. And, Coach, before we talk about the wins, I got to just throw it out there, of course. I'm sure it didn't escape your notice that Buffalo was beaten by Northern Illinois. You now are tied with Buffalo at 11-2 in the conference, and even as far as the overall best record in the conference. Even though they have the tiebreaker on you, it is within reach now. If they stumble again and you guys take care of business, that top seed is there.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the number one seed is a big deal, you know, solely for one reason, and that's the automatic bid to the NIT, you know, in case you don't win the conference tournament. But there's really no difference between the one and the two seed in the tournament itself. And obviously, if you tie with them and they get the one seed, you're still, you know, regular season MAC champs. And that's been our goal all year long, is win the regular season, and then we'll get ready for the tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. And winning that MAC regular season championship would certainly be something. And I hope that continues to be the goal. And that is something that is certainly within reach. So let's talk. You got five games left, obviously, before the start of the tournament. But let's look back now at the trip to Oxford last week. We discussed the challenge of that one. You came away with a 6-point win. It was not an easy one. Take us back to that.
A game that, I thought from start to finish, we played, for the most part really well. Then wasn't real happy with the start of our second half, which has been a little bit of an issue lately. But boy, we came out in that first half, were very, very efficient at both ends, really guarded. And then we really guarding the 3-point line, been very, very happy in how we're defending the 3-point line. And, that's a big reason for our success in conference play. We're, over a plus 10%. In field goal percentage offense, the 3-point field goal percentage defense, and that's been a big key for us. And, in our ball screen defense, we're really trying to concentrate, never having more than two, in the ball screen. And that's been a big key for us. So we can, what we call scan in the 3-point line, and not overhelp. In the past, we've overhelped. We've tried to tag on the dive guy. And this has been a big help for us to, we may give up some tough twos or some stuff at the rim. But with a guy like Luke Kanapke and Taylor Attaway, if we can keep them back in the arc area and protect the goal and try to block shots, it's been much better for us than giving up on contested open treats.
We're talking to Rockets head coach Todd Kowalczyk about UT's ongoing winning streak. They took down the University of Miami last Saturday. Then, of course, this week it was OU, and that was the home win. Tell us about that one.
A game that we probably settled in a little bit too early, got up 15-0, went to the bench, and our bench, to be honest, it wasn't very good that game. And in that 15, we lost, we didn't lose the lead ever, but they certainly cut into it. I don't think that the game was ever threatened, but we certainly, kind of got a little complacent. And it seems to me like we've been playing better on the road, which is a good sign for Saturday.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. You have been playing exceptionally well on the road. Of course, you're still winning at home as well as this winning streak goes on. Is there any rhyme or reason to that? Why, we need to band together because we're in hostile territory type of thing? Is there a psychological type edge that you're getting there from that, and maybe they kind of breathe a little easier in their home confines? Is there any reason to that?
I think there is. I think there is a reason, and I'll make a deal with you. You and I will discuss it over a cold beer in the off season. How's that?
That's not something you want to talk about out loud, huh?
No, it really isn't. I'm sorry, but it really isn't.
No, I can respect that. Let's talk about some of the performances. And, there's a lot of guys you've been looking forward to stepping up. You've been talking about Kanapke, and you've been talking about some of your other shooters, Navigado, coming around and getting that going again. But, boy, the consistency of your top two, Trayshawn and Jalen, has just been, really spectacular. They've been leading the way in scoring and in shooting and probably many other ways all along. And you can't really say enough superlative things about those guys.
At both ends, Jalen Sanford doesn't get enough credit for his defense. He's a guy that just is in position. He stays in front. He makes big plays, and Trey's just got good instincts, and his defensive numbers all year have been really good. And that's, to be honest, coming into the season, my one fear with him was a defensive end.
Coach, you were we talked last week about the ongoing struggles that Nate was having. He was just in a shooting slump, and you needed him to get hot again. He made three in each of the last two wins, and I think 6 for 11. You get over 50% from three. That's spectacular. That means he's out of it. He scored 15 and 19,
yeah.
Or maybe it was 19 and 15 back-to-back. How big is that for him?
He just needed to see the ball go in, but he's a guy that consistently plays hard now. I think sometimes he gets a bad rap for his lack of rebounding, and he's not. That's where he's not the most physical or the quickest of foot. But I can assure you this: it's rarely from a lack of effort. He's not a real talented rebounder, but he is positionally, in position, blocks guys out for the most part. And I think defensively continues to make strides, even though he's not the quickest, of feet.
Jim Cushlin is here, as you know, Coach. Last week he was a little conspicuous by his silence. He is silent no more.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And perfect.
Looking ahead, Coach, on this winning streak, now you go on the road for a couple this coming week and weekend. It's at Ball State. And I find these two very interesting matchups that will tell us a lot more about your squad. First up is Saturday's game at Ball State. That's one of your two MAC losses this season. And then, obviously, I know coaches such yourself think one game ahead of time, or one game at a time. Tuesday it'll be at Eastern Michigan, and they always have that interesting press that can mess with some people.
Well, you know, Ball State, you know, we just simply didn't compete or play well. Why that is, how that is, I have no idea. I think every team in the country has a game like that, you know, sometime, you know, in the second half of the season. That was our game. That was not the Toledo Rockets we've seen all year. Even our Buffalo road loss, we competed, we played hard. We didn't always play smart, and had too many turnovers, missed a lot of foul shots, but we competed in the Buffalo game. We didn't compete against Ball State the first time around. I guarantee you this, fellas, we will compete on Saturday. You talked about, you know, Eastern. You know, their zone is as good as any 2-3 zone in the country. They're very good at it. You gotta make shots, but you really gotta be able to control frustration in that game, because they're gonna try to frustrate you.
Coach Todd Kowalczyk joining us, talking a little bit about the Rockets and the red hot win streak that continues. Coach, let's talk about Saturday, Ball State. Let's talk a little bit about Eastern if you want to skip. And I know you don't like to do that, but just those are the next two before we talk to you. So the Ball State challenge, you just talked about some of it, but can you just remind us a scouting report on this team?
Well, they're, you know, Taylor Parsons is their point guard. He's like, you know, 6'2", 220 pounds. He's kind of a big, thick guy. Plays at a very slow pace, but a very, you know, very good pace for him. He gets guys on his backside, and he's hard to get around. But they simply just beat us on the glass, you know, the last game. And that was on us. You know, that was effort. That was, us just not competing, but that will not be the case on Saturday. We will rebound better, and we will certainly compete. This is a separation game. This is, you know, we're up 3 with 5 to play on them. This would put us up 4 with 4 to play in the Clemson MAC West title.
And they're hot, too. They've won 5 out of their last 6, including 3 in a row, one of which, of course, is the one over you. So certainly they know they have an opportunity here. They're 3 behind you. This, you know, MAC West race is not over yet as far as I'm concerned. I'm sure they're saying as far as they're concerned. So this is a great opportunity for them to cut into that and get another one. And, again, I know you've got them first, but just can we get a quick look-see at Eastern before we talk again next week?
Well, I haven't, I haven't seen any film on Eastern, just simply, you know, because I would never watch them in a scouting situation. That's how we play them, because they don't play like us. You know, like when I'm watching Ball State, I would never watch Ball State Eastern. That to me would be a waste of my time.
That's a good point.
So I really, you know, I haven't seen them at all the entire year. I saw them early in the year on national TV against Syracuse. They're different than they have been. Their guards are not nearly as big, which has always been an issue for us, because that zone, the bigger the guards, the harder it is to play against. But I can guarantee you this, that is a very, very good 2-3 zone. And we're going to have to do a good job just attacking it, getting the ball to the high post and taking good shots.
And you're going to have to do it 2 times in 4 games to close the season, and just have those weird scheduling quirks. You got them just a week apart, essentially. So, Coach Kowalczyk, keep up the fantastic work. Congratulations on the wins that keep piling up. Get a couple more, and we'll catch up next week.
Take care, guys.
Thank you, Coach. Coach Todd Kowalczyk of the Rockets finishing it up for us here on what has been a very, very interesting edition of the Extravaganza. A lot of very difficult things to talk about in the first half hour of the program, but really fun stuff on baseball, the NFL draft, and college hoops to wrap it up. Tomorrow, we'll do anything you want to do. That's because it's free for all Friday. Drive time is coming up next, so stay where you are on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, we'll see you tomorrow.